This figure of the blind beggar loomed very large in the literature of the early church. That is, it was seen by that group of males, unfortunately, there were no mothers of the church, just fathers of the church, that this man stood as an emblem for everybody, that this is simply a description of the human condition. We all are blind beggars before God. There's another aspect of this that is sort of implicit, namely the belief in the early days that whatever disease people suffered from was also accompanied by sin. We mercifully don't believe that anymore. But this is also implicit in this narrative, that Jesus, in letting this guy see again, also cleansed him. But I think that the image of the blind beggar is a wonderful one. What are we blind to? What don't we see? Ourselves, I think, primarily. We don't see ourselves as we really are. We see ourselves as our wives or our husbands, our kids tell us we are, or society, or our teachers, or our parents, or our friends. We have all these messages coming to us from every possible direction, TV, the culture at large, saying who we are. But that's very different, I think, from who we are before God, who alone sees us as we are. And so what the plea is for here is precisely, first of all, to recognize that we really don't see us as we are. The kind of conventional, familiar, habitual way of seeing ourselves, appropriating ourselves, is in the long run inadequate and false. And this, of course, is what religion is supposed to be, bringing us to the truth. And above all, the truth of who we are. And we are sinners. Called by God, of course, to grow up, to grow into the truth of ourselves, of God, and of the world. First of all, of ourselves. And so the point of the reading is to remind us again that we don't know who we are, as that great prayer of Merton put it. As Paul will say over and over, I don't know what to pray for. I don't really judge myself. It's a pervasive theme of all real religion. And until that clarity begins to emerge more profoundly, we're going to make all kinds of missteps. See, this is so counter to so much of what is going on in the culture. I think it's very hard to first of all get back to this and then to appropriate it. Because for all kinds of reasons, we don't want to see who we are. We want to escape. As the great Simon and Garfunkel put it, faking it, not really making it. But then, of course, the point of seeing who we are, as we deepen that vision of ourselves and of God and of the world, is the consequence of that, rather, is an enlargement of our hearts. A greater embrace of everybody. Because part of this self-knowledge that we think we have also, and essentially, contains all kinds of exclusions. I am whom I am because I'm not one of them. This is very comforting, of course. And this, of course, is part of the whole movement, the trajectory of what we believe is God's revelation. If you start from the page one of the Bible to the end of the book of Revelation, what is going on over and over and over again is precisely this enlargement of vision, this greater inclusion of everybody. Whether it's and the prime exponent of this, of course, is Paul, where the division between male and female, Greek and barbarian, slave and free, was dissolved in Christ, he said. And that's what we're supposed to be headed toward in some totally abstract way, because I don't do that. I don't do that. There are all kinds of people I'd like to exclude. But again, the important thing to remember is the reason for my exclusion is my own narrow and self-serving self-image, self-understanding. And the fear that is embedded in that. We don't want to think about that stuff. Our comfort zones, I love that phrase, our comfort zones are too comfortable. And that they sustain this inadequate vision of ourselves. So again, you could put all the three of the readings together. Jeremiah talking about God bringing everybody from every place. A letter to the Hebrews talking about our own weaknesses, our own inadequacies. And then finally, climaxing in the figure of this little exchange between Bartimaeus and Jesus. It's scary to say, Lord, let me see again. Or let me see for the first time. But the only reason it's scary is that we do not believe that God is this benign lover who calls us to ourselves and to herself and to each other. We really don't believe it. I don't. But that's why the prayer ought to be a prayer of great encouragement, not of intimidation. Lord, let me see.